You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barron and I'm your host, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And we're so glad that you're here today, because today we're going to be addressing one of the biggest challenges we know in this great profession, which is mental health. And boy, do I have a treat for you today, Dr. Jackie Kinley, who we got to know last year. So stick around. I know you're going to absolutely love this. Now, a couple things. You know, this community has grown in such a great way, and we're so grateful. And as we look at the one-year mark, I think it's actually 1 year ago tomorrow that we started the conference. And we got to know over 38,000 of you that opted in, and it grew. And there were younger dentists, there were dental students, there were people that were thinking about becoming dentists. And I just want to do a couple things. Number one, I want to welcome you if you're just showing up here for the first time. And I also want to ask you, if you're listening on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you're consuming podcasts, go down there and hit the subscribe button, because I want you to show up every single week. You're going to see every single week, I'm going to bring you another expert in dentistry, and we're going to have them give us insight on some of the biggest challenges so that you guys can create a better practice and a better life. I also want to encourage you to check out our private Facebook group. If you haven't joined us over there, check it out. So it's called The Best Practices Powered by ACT Dental, where over 13,000 of you are over there just helping each other every single day on any question that comes up dentistry related. So you'll love that. And then lastly, you know, if you're looking for solutions with your practice, you know, coming up on the 1 year of this, a lot of people are predicting that the world is going to go back in a strong way to face-to-face and people going back, trying to get back to normal as much as possible. And I know all of us can't wait for that. But if you're looking for solutions on how to just get your practice ready, you'll see we're a practice coaching company. We help practices do this all the time. Even if you just need somebody to talk to about hour changing, you know, how do we make a better situation with our systems? Just get our practice going. That's what we do. So feel free to reach out to us at actdental.com. You can also see that we have ACTDentalU, where we bring you a brand new masterclass every single Friday. And you get 30 minutes, 90 minutes to learn from them, and 30 minutes where it's a great Q&A and just an awesome community. So I want to welcome my guest today. So Jackie, I got to know you. Now, I want to tell a little bit of a story on this, because Dr. Scott McLean, who I you know, I'd heard of, I knew of him. We got to know each other better in the conference. And as we were assembling great educators for the conference, he's like, no, you want to get Jackie. And I was like, well, who's Jackie? He's like, no, she's brilliant. And we all need this topic, because I've told this story many times, but Jackie, I had a full out panic attack on March 17th, 18th, 19th, somewhere in there. And then, with a little help from my friends, I was able to calm down a little bit. But we were still trying to make sense of this world. And then you came on and you were the breath of fresh air. I remember we had our Zoom account and we only had it set to 1,000 people. And then you showed up the first time And like the feed went off the charts and I was like, you guys, we need more bandwidth. And then we had you back again and again and again. And every single time we had you back, you gave us more perspective, more things to think about. And you also brought a different take. It was kind of an inside out approach to this thing that's so important. So I want people to know first who you are. If they've never heard you, like, who is Dr. Jackie Kinley? What do you do? Like, who are you?
I'm a psychiatrist, I guess, first and foremost. I'm a psychiatrist by default. I ended up in medical school. I'm a medical doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a psychiatrist. And so I went through medical school and sort of, you know, tried to find my way through Western medicine. Some things about it I absolutely loved, but what I really missed was the person. So I'm a psychiatrist. I love connecting with people. Trained in Denver, Colorado. I'm from Canada, but trained in Denver. And yeah, I just love working with people. I'm an author. I'm a coach, a trainer, a facilitator. Yeah, I do a lot of different things because there's a lot of things to do.
Right, absolutely. And today we're going to be talking about some of the. Now, you've written a great book on this, and I'm going to put it on the screen. So if you haven't, she's got some great material. So we're going to touch on a lot of it today. But if you want to take a deep dive into all of this, the mental fitness, you know, game changer, I want you to describe the concept. Now, take us through the journey that we've been through in the last year also. Like, why is this topic so important? And how do you see it differently than probably most people we talk to?
Well, you know, I guess, Kirk, you know, first of all, when we first started to speak about this, you know, everybody thought that this pandemic was going to be sort of a sprint, you know, that we just had to hunker down. We had to deal with things. We had to sort of just buckle down and get through it. And what's become really clear is it's a marathon, right? So the stress has persisted. And as stress persists, it has a significant impact on us, right? Not just physically, our physical bodies, but psychologically, right? Stress can really wear us down. And so people have had to develop skills that they have never had to develop before. We've had to call on resources. Some people have been through really stressful times. They've developed these skills. But a lot of us haven't. And so a lot of people were feeling stretched or feeling strained, you know, and it can lead to injury. It can lead to illness. And so really, I've been trying to get out front of all of this, helping to impart skills, you know, to sort of people, you know, recognizing that your brain is like any other muscle and we have to develop skills to be able to deal with stress. And these are extraordinary times. These are extraordinary stressors. And most of us have never had to develop these skills. I think COVID's been the great leveler. I mean, I actually, in some ways it's been horrible and in some ways it's been fabulous, right? Because it's really forced us all to admit that we're human and that mental illness can occur in any of us if we're not careful and if we don't take care of ourselves, just like physical illness can happen. And so the mental fitness paradigm is kind of born out of that.
Right. And I want to open this up too, because in COVID, I wasn't, even after I started to calm down, I wasn't sleeping very well. Mm-hmm. And then you have this thing that just keeps going on top of it, the physical part was bad because I was, you know, a lot of us were just eating more, probably drinking more. Yeah. There were some good pieces of it, like a forced sabbatical. There were things where we had to slow down and, but making sense of all this and just getting back to these exercises, the mental fitness game, there were so many tools that you gave us that like just I was just thinking one foot in front of the other every day, just like one step at a time. So, and go a little bit deeper. When you say mental, like, you know, the brain is a muscle. Can you just go a little deeper? Like, what do you really mean by that? And are we in a different place where we just have more things coming at us? We look at a lot more images. We're not as physical. I don't even know. I'm just asking you these questions.
Yeah. No, those are all really good questions. Right. And I guess the first thing is, you know, I mean, what you're talking about is sort of more stuff coming at us is, there are more stressors and they're different stressors. Right. So, and different stressors require different skills in order to be able to deal with them. So we've had a lot of different stressors, but I think when it comes to mental fitness, what I'm actually talking about is your ability, you know, your psychological ability to be able to cope with those stressors. And we know that we get strained and we have illness and injury when when we're not psychologically prepared or equipped to deal with those stressors. And so when I say your brain is like a muscle, there are certain mental habits of mind that you can build and develop, you know, that help you to stay healthy and strong through stressful times. You alluded to a couple of them, you know, already, like at the opening, you know, staying positive and optimistic, fostering that kind of positive mindset, right? Seeing possibility, focusing on what's under your control, right? These are all sort of perspective taking skills, right? But you've alluded to some other ones, right? Even sort of like I sort of talk about four mental muscles, you know, your you know, the sort of muscle groups. If you can see fit, which is perspective, if you can think fit, which is, you know, keep your thinking brain on, you know, calm down and focused. If you can feel fit, which is deal with all those emotions that come up. And you talked about panic, right? Anxiety and panic happen when emotions start. And then the last one is act fit, right? Is if you can reach out to other people, stay connected. And so these are skills, these are habits of mind. You can learn these things, you can make connections in your brain, and you can strengthen those through exercises so that you actually become, it becomes second nature. You can build the muscle memory. So when you're under stress, you know how to respond in a positive and adaptive way.
Yeah. Well, let's start breaking this down. Give me a framework. I love this conversation, and I know how important it is. You know, yeah. It's very, very important. And we've also learned it's not a stigma anymore. It's something we have to talk openly about and proactively about. And we had Josh Austin last week, and he was amazing. And as a human being, you always want to fix things. And he's like, no, you need more understanding first. But I also love to know in the process of understanding, like a framework of just even things we can do personally. Mm-hmm. So walk me through this. Like,
Well, so first of all, I want to come back to Josh, because I think, you know, I really love that, because I think it's so true, is people aren't broken. You know, I think it's really important. And I think our system is broken because we look at people and we think they're the problem. And actually, people aren't broken. People just haven't developed skills. So these are capacities that you can develop. When you don't have those capacities, if you get stretched and strained, you know, then you can certainly develop symptoms. Anybody can, right? Any of us can. Any of us can get anxious, depressed, even psychotic, right? Any of us can if our capacity is sort of breached. And so it's not about judging people. It's about understanding what resources individuals have psychologically and helping them to develop the skills they need. These aren't character flaws, right? These are skills deficits. So I love that sort of lens. We use exactly the same lens. The framework that we use is kind of a sense-making tool. So it's this idea that, you know, is that, you know, we can sort of help you to measure, you know, what's my perspective? You know, am I strong in these different habits? You know, how do I think when I'm under, you know, stress? Am I able to, you know, calm my neural circuitry, my arousal, right? Am I able to settle myself down, stay focused, that mental discipline? Am I able to identify and deal with my emotions, the surge of energy that, you know, comes, and can I reach out? Can I actually empathize and stay connected to other people? So the framework we use is see fit, think fit, feel fit, act fit. And there are what we call power moves, exercises that you can do and practice to develop those different brain regions. And loosely, those correlate with large neural networks in your brain. And so, you know, there's a whole neurobiology underneath, or neuroscience underneath what we do. It's sort of an evidence-based approach, which is where my expertise in psychiatry has been really helpful, you know, working with folks for years. You know, I can see what works, I can see what doesn't work, and what we all have in common, right? We're all human. We all have to develop these skills in order to stay well.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question too? And this is a little... What do you think, from your perspective, people fundamentally get wrong about this? What's the number one?
Number one?
Number one.
Number one, emotions are bad. You know, people think that emotions, because, you know, all of a sudden you have this energy in your body. We have a lot of beliefs, right? You know, anger's not safe. Anger's dangerous. Anger means I did something wrong. If somebody gets angry with me, you know, sadness is weak. All of those things. People think, you know, emotions, there's so much misinformation about emotions. And emotions are actually adaptive. They're empowering. They're very, very helpful. But like the truth, they can be used for good and evil. Right? Anger can be used for advocacy and ambition and perseverance. It can also be used to be nasty and mean. And you know, sadness is actually really, you know, important. It means that you attach to people. It means that things matter. When you lose something that you care about, it's sad, right? So that's natural and normal. Grieving is you know, part of life, right? But when we can't deal with anger, when we can't deal with sadness, when we can't deal with fear, right? When we get stuck in emotions, that's when we get sick. So stuck fear, right, leads to anxiety. You know, stuck sadness leads to depression. You know, stuck anger leads to suspiciousness and paranoia, aggressive behaviors, right? And people will try to medicate away those symptoms, right? They try to get rid of them. But actually, it's the opposite, is that the way we get rid of anxiety and depression is we need to start to be able to feel our feelings better. It's not about feeling better. It's about getting better at feeling. So if we can connect with that emotion, listen to it, use the energy, it's just information, harness it and work through it, it will not only help us, you know, make the right decisions, right? Because it informs us about what's happening. It actually keeps us healthy and well.
Right. Now, I'm going to ask you potentially another controversial question. And it's everybody has their perspective. And I really value yours. I think it's very important that we all have somebody to speak to. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you should have someone to speak to, whether it be
a therapist. It's a gift.
It's a gift. It's totally a gift. What, from your perspective, are the right people to see?
Oh goodness. That's a tough question.
It is a tough question, but you know, like, some people were like, well, I didn't, you know, it just stirred up more and we didn't get anywhere.
Okay.
Type of thing. And then I also want to go back to your framework. You said see fit, feel fit, act fit. I missed one. There was
think.
That's number
you're
one.
You're not thinking, Kirk.
I know.
No. So you always build from the bottom up. So see fit is perspective, approach, right? Think fit starts with your brainstem, quieting down your, you know, brainstem so that, you know, when you're too stressed, you flip your lid, right? I talk about, you know, when you're really, really stressed, you don't think clearly, right?
Right.
And so it's about see fit, think fit, and then feel fit, sink into the emotion. When you're under stress and pressure, your emotion is information. Don't shoot the messenger. What am I feeling? Read the emotion. And then the act fit is to respond in a positive way, to stay in relationship, right? To empathize, to stay connected. Because when we're under stress, when we're fearful and under stress, it's really easy to just see difference. Right? It's because you become kind of narrow-minded, myopic, you don't see clearly. So it's really easy to fall into judgment and difference. And so it's really important when you're under stress to, you know, settle yourself down, to think fit, to feel fit, and then to act fit, to lean into the other person, to empathize, to understand. This is what Josh was saying. When we're under stress, it behooves us to understand. We're quick to judge. And it's actually the opposite. You know, anger means yes. It means if you're frustrated and angry and stressed out, then you probably need to communicate more deeply with the person that you're with, right? That's how you find higher ground, is you dig deeper, right? That gets you to higher ground, paradoxically, right?
Yeah, I love this. And I want to walk through these steps, and then maybe I'll ask the question a little bit differently. One of the challenges.
Oh, no. I want to go back to your first question.
Okay, let's go back. Go ahead and answer that.
I want to go back because I think that's a really important question.
I know, but let me tell you why I'm asking the question, because
we
coach dental professionals all over the world.
Right? Yeah.
And I know when they're stressed and I'm like, you talk to somebody and they're like, I don't want to do that. And they're even hesitant to do it. I'm like, no, you need to talk to somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're held back by their own beliefs about this experience. So maybe couple those together.
Like, well, let me talk about the hesitancy and the resistance of folks to sort of speak to people,
right?
Because I think that's important, and I think that part of that is because it's personal, right? There's a lot of shame, there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of stigma around feelings, and often people can think it looks weak or there's vulnerability, you know, opening up to people, right? You know, you're sort of laying your heart on your sleeve. You're opening up to somebody. And so it is scary. And if people have had a bad experience, you know, either in therapy or just in relationships in general, right? Sometimes relationships can be a source of threat. You know, people are like, I don't trust people. I've been burned before, right? So sometimes approaching people is really difficult. So we need to respect that and understand that. And as people that people come to talk to, we have to be able to empathize with that, and we have to create the safety and the trust in order, you know, to have the privilege, right? Really, it's a privilege to be able to, you know, work with somebody to share that personal space and try to help them.
Right.
The other thing is, though, I think, you know, what you're talking about is, I like to think about it like this, Kirk. This actually might be a nice metaphor. Like, I used to always be in the hospital and always deal with folks that were drowning. Okay. So when folks are drowning, they need a lifeguard. Okay. So it depends on who you're talking to and what the person needs. So sometimes people do need a lifeguard. They need a mental health professional, right? Whether that's a psychiatrist or a psychologist or even a social worker, whatever. But other times, you know, other times people actually are just kind of struggling a little bit and they're sort of splashing around in the water. What they really need is a swim coach, right? And actually, I'd rather be a swim coach, teach people the skills they need so they don't drown, right? So I'm trying to get above water with people, right? So I think the first thing is when you say somebody needs to talk to somebody, there's a kind of a fine line, right? And if they're having symptoms, right? If you're actually having symptoms, if you have a major anxiety problem or major depression or you know, psychotic, like, you know, perceptual problems, you know, then you really do need to see somebody. Then you're a little bit below water and you need somebody to help you get back up. So these are complementary, right? So I think the first thing is sometimes people don't want to see somebody because, you know, you have to be able, yeah, in order to work with somebody, you have to be ready, willing, and able. And the able piece is that you need to be with the right person, okay? Right. And then, you know, the other thing is you have to be ready and you have to be willing. So, and because it is hard work and you have to move at the right pace. And so if we turn it around to the professionals, right? Sometimes you get a bad match, right? Because you need different things at different times. Right. So if you're underwater, you certainly need somebody. And sometimes it's medication. Sometimes it's somebody to help, you know, help you work through, you know, do therapy. And there's different kinds of therapy. Right. And sometimes cognitive behavior therapy isn't very good for somebody who's a real thinker. Right. Sometimes they need feelings. Right. Sometimes therapists focus on feelings. And actually, that's not what the person needs. They actually need to focus on their thinking. That's why I like our framework, is because it builds skills in all those areas. Right. Mm-hmm. It builds skills in all those areas.
I love it. Now, our good friend Deepak, who always asks great questions, he says, it seems mental health has been a problem for a long time, but all of a sudden it's come to the forefront of social awareness. What, in your opinion, what's caused this? Great question.
The epidemic, which is now a pandemic. It's that, you know, at least in Canada, right? You know, we say 1 in 5 people have a mental illness. That's impossible. I mean, that's not a, you know, that's a systemic problem, right? And that's what I'm saying is we think people are the problem. Maybe the problem is something else. Maybe it's the way we look at people, the way we label people, the way we deal with people. You know, I think that sometimes we actually exacerbate symptoms. You know, I've had people come to me and say, oh, you know, I have this, I have that. And they really identify with a label. And we have focused so much on diagnosing people, right? And putting a label on people, which can be really helpful in the short term. Like, I'm not against that. You know, you're struggling with this. But if they stick and get stuck, and if you don't actually then move on and understand the person and right. help the person develop the skills they need, then they're not going to get better. They're going to keep coming back, and it's going to get worse because you haven't actually dealt with the problem. So mental health problems have been there for a long time. In some ways, I think our systems are the problem. Our systems and the paradigms that we use when we look at people.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many facets of this. And I do want to go back to your framework and maybe give people an idea or even an example of how I would use it when you say see fit, think fit, feel fit, and then act fit. Walk me through.
Yeah.
If this is resonating for me, like take me through a challenge and how I would just use this to improve my mental fitness in this.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to use an example that you shared, you know, panic, right? You know, a lot, yeah, you're anxious, fearful, overwhelmed. There's so much going on, right? You know, so if I sit down with you, right, and sort of do a, you know, sort of profile, right? You know, we actually have a, you know, measure that we use, right? Do a little profile. It's quick, easy, you know, and be able to say, look, you know what? Your perspective is actually really good. Like you see fit, you can see things, you know, you're positive, you're an optimistic person, you know, you like to care for yourself. That's not the problem. Under the think fit, the stress management score might actually be really low, which means that when you start to go, you're an overthinker. So you start to think. So you don't settle your arousal down. So that would be an area that would be a growth opportunity, right? That would be a growth opportunity. And then the other one is, and I don't even know, but I'm thinking, listening to what you're saying, is probably you were having a lot of emotion, you know, sadness, you know, fear, anger, frustration. So sometimes people don't know how to read their emotions. They don't know how to tolerate them. And so that would be another growth area. So, you know, based on, you know, kind of what you're saying, probably based on that profile, you know, my hunch is act fit is that your social skills are really good. You know, you're good at empathizing with people. You're good at reaching out. Now, you might not be great at boundaries, though, which is one of the act fit skills, which is starting to say no, because you might have overextended yourself, which contributes to the fear, contributes to all of that and the frustration that you can't save the world, right? Oh,
that's probably, I'm the worst in the world at saying no. Like I can't say no. And I also, I couple that, and I think dentists can relate, like I have a control issue. I like predictability. I love predictability. I love knowing that, you know, and as a speaker, as a coach traveling for, I've been doing that for 20 years. That was all gone. Our entire business model was gone.
Totally gone in
a couple of weeks. And so I wasn't like, yeah, you know what? We'll kind of figure this out. I'm like, that's kind of a big deal. You know, no different than I would imagine somebody owning a restaurant going, all I've ever done is run a restaurant. You're telling me to be calm? Like,
But it's interesting, right? Because you probably were using external structures that gave you that sense of control, right? True. The routine, right? Everything is everything is set up externally to give you that sense of security and that sense of safety. But it has to come from inside when you're under stress, right? So when you're under stress, right, how do you regain a sense of control, right? That's one of the perspective habits, right? So it's really thinking about that is how do I do that? So we teach people that. Right? We teach them, okay, so, you know, what's under your control, what's not, how do you in the moment locate yourself, right? How do you release things that aren't under your control, and how do you step into things that are, right? So that's a little bit of a, you know, so we teach people a framework, we teach folks how to do that, we actually have them walk through so they can locate themselves in any of those moments so that when you're under stress, you can regain that. It's not an external thing. It has to come from inside. You have to be able to locate it. And that was a big thing during COVID early on, was helping people regain a sense of control, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I also, this might be a little controversial, but I have to go there. You know, I do, because I do care about the world. I care about my kids world. I care about all, you know, a friend of ours made us watch the movie Social Dilemma. And I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't want to just like go down that rabbit hole. But one of the things that I felt while I was watching that scary movie is, we're losing sense of what's real, you know, because I used to enjoy social media. I'll tell you, I hate it now. I absolutely hate it. And then you've got quite the, you know, you watch it for too long. I'll tell you one thing, it doesn't make me feel any better. I don't get on Facebook and go, oh man, I just feel great now. You see that, you see the separation. You see people like showing every meal and now they're on a beach and it's awesome and all this stuff. I don't begrudge that or anything like that, but you got one side and then you got the hate side of it and they're like competing for space in my feed. And I wonder about the kids coming out like, you know, we don't even know what's real sometimes. So I don't even know what I'm asking, but I'm asking, I guess, is this stuff that we're seeing distorting our ability to make sense of it sometimes and what's real and achieving well, fitness?
I think one of the things that's really important is technology is two-dimensional. It filters out real. It squeezes the life out of things, right? You know, emotion is energy. You know, it's all about energy, and energy gets transformed when it turns into bits and bytes. So the emojis and all of those things you can do. So what we see, you know, is like whitewashed and it tends to polarize things too, right? And so you're absolutely right, as we live in a world where it's hard to know unless you're in real time and real space with somebody what's actually real, because you lose the texture, you lose all those other dimensions, right? You know, the sixth dimension is kind of your intuition, your sixth sense, right? But you lose all that sense. It's so interesting because we talk about our senses, right? And when you put something through technology, all of the sense is taken out of it. Right. And so so common sense is not common. And then the other thing is that, you know, then we try to create artificial reality, right, in order to substitute for that. Right. So, you know, you're not alone in that, you know, most it's all like whitewashed. It's not real what you see. Right. It's all fabricated. It's presented. It's a presentation. Right.
Right. Yeah. And Deepak asked another question. We'll quickly address this one because I don't want the show to be about it, but I feel your pain, Deepak. Yeah. You know, I feel cell phones and social media have negatively affected my kids.
Any
advice on reducing their usage?
Well, a couple things are, you know, boundaries. Limits. Parents, you know, feel like they can't set boundaries because they're going to hurt their kids or they're going to make their kids be different from other kids. You know what? Boundaries are really important, right? You can, I don't know how old your kids are, Deepak, but if you have little kids, you can set up like a thing like a net nanny on the computer at home, which limits their time. It manages their screen time, the sites that they can go to, right? You know, there's things that you can do to actually pre-program cell phones and stuff and to limit their data, limit their usage. And what do you put in its place? Real time, face-to-face time, you know, quiet time, reading a book, you know, sitting down, going for a run, time with friends, get outside, you know, real interactions, human in interactions, as opposed to technological ones.
Yeah, amen.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
I do want to ask this question because, you know, mental health in all of our schools, especially our school, they talk about it all the time. The environmental impact, you know, there's all these theories now, and there's a lot of them on just the impact of a pandemic and the future development of brains and things like that. And I feel bad for my senior who's had 2 years of pretty much, you know, you can't do that. You know, we talk about, you know, mental fitness. We've talked about, you know, social media, but what about the environmental aspects of, you know, healthy brain development and mental fitness? I don't have any research to be able to support this, but being outside, I just feel better. Going for a walk, I feel better. I'm not a yoga guy, but when I go to yoga, I feel better. Like, I feel better when I have a solo fire pit outside and I got the guys over and we're drinking beer and we're having fun. Like, there's just
Chardonnay.
The environmental aspect of mental fitness as well.
Social aspect. Yeah.
So,
Well, you know, a couple of things. First of all, you know, in many ways, this is like our kids' war, right? You know, during war times, people go through extraordinary times in their scope of their what they can do. They're limited. Their freedoms are curbed, right? So you know, this is what they're going to have to work through. But absolutely, getting outside, I mean, nature heals, right? I mean, nature's natural, it's healing. And so you want to get kids outside, you want to get them away from technology. I often say technology bullies nature. You know, our brains don't think that quickly. You know, we get bombarded with information. So getting outside, spending real time with kids, you know, all of those things matter. This is critical time, right? You know, because they're learning social and emotional skills, right? And this is when you want to learn them. And you learn them by being in social and emotional settings. So you need to, as much as you can, get them out, involved, and around other people where they can learn and practice those skills. There are ways to learn to use technology in a positive way, right? You know, by reaching out on the phone, having phone conversations, Zooming. It's not the technology. It's not the, you know, the sort of medium. You can actually use, like, you know, like this use of a conversation, using technology to actually go a little deeper, to try to connect, right? Not the superficial stuff that you're talking about, just scrolling down your, you know, Facebook feed. Passively consuming technology or information is not good for you, right? So looking at the pictures just to see what everybody else is doing, not helpful. But using it in an active way where you really reach out, where you really connect with people, in that way, it actually can be helpful, right? So it's about how you use the technology, right?
Yeah. This is so great. And so, and as you embrace, you know, mental fitness in these exercises, as we start to see fit, you know, think fit, feel fit, act fit, give me some expectations of how I can now start to improve things overall. And maybe an example of acting fit. You know, we talked about
the
process, but let's go a little bit further down the road. Like what really starts to happen as you develop these neural pathways or the mind as a muscle? What can I expect?
Well, ACTFIT is interesting because we actually have a whole social neural circuitry system. Like we have mirror neurons, right, where we can actually see, you know, the mind of the other, right? So being able to mentalize, to be able to really be attuned, it's sort of like giving your undivided attention non-judgmentally to another person, really leaning into their space, leaning into their perspective, feeling like sort of resonating with their emotional state. Those are things that you can learn to do and you can practice. You can actually get better at it. You can learn how to listen more deeply, to suspend judgment, right? To empathize with people, you know, and then, but not to, you know, sort of fuse with people, right? It's not about losing boundaries, right? So there's empathy, then there's appropriate boundaries, recognizing healthy patterns, you know, of interaction, right? That they're equal, reciprocal, mutual, respectful, right? Starting to learn those so that you can recognize them, so you can locate yourself when you're doing things that are healthy and when you're doing things that actually aren't healthy. Learning how to manage conflict, like all of those things are things that you can learn and you can practice, right? Learning how to assert yourself, learning how to state what you need, right? Those are skills that you have to practice. They're scary. It's hard to sort of step into your space and ask for help or give somebody feedback. And the more you practice it, the better you get at it, right? It's communication. And the more you practice it, you get better at it, not because it's easy, but because you get stronger. Your capacity to step into that fear, that anxiety, you know, to tolerate and harness that emotion, whether it's anger or hurt or sadness, you get better at it, right? And so these are skills that you can learn and you can develop. And some people don't deal with conflict. They don't empathize with people. You know, they don't set boundaries. And it's not because they're bad people, or it's because they've never thought about it. They've never really learned how. And these things are really important, not only for you to stay healthy, right, but for your relationships to be healthy and honest and not just superficial, right? So many relationships are superficial, right?
Yeah, they are. Now, I have to ask you too, because I'm passionate about your work. I mean, I think you're incredible. And anybody that does anything, like I love what I do. I know you love what you do. Tell us, like, one of your favorite stories. You know, you've changed people's lives, and you don't have to share specific information, but give us an example of how one of your favorite stories of hope, like where I worked with a kid And here's through this process, through this framework, he or she was able to finish that story for me.
Well, you know what? I guess, you know, the way to say this is, you know, I sort of think of myself as an alchemist. And what I mean is I turn people into gold because I see the gold in them. Right. And so I see potential in everybody. Right. And so, you know, I've had people come, have significant symptoms, whether it's kind of, you know, pseudo seizures or, you know, tic disorders or all kinds of things. And what happens is when they start to work through their emotions, when they start to change their perspective, the way they see things, when they start to learn how to ground themselves, to tolerate their emotions, when they start to learn those skills, they get better and their lives change, right? And their symptoms go away, right? So, you know, I guess for me, and that's one of the reasons why I've gone upstream, is because I've been so fortunate, you know, to work with people. I've been privileged to be able to work with people who have been ill. And what I mean by that is who are crippled with symptoms, suffering with symptoms. But what I found was I was constantly downstream trying to pull the babies out of the water, right? Like, you know, as opposed to going upstream and saying, you know, let's stop throwing them in, right? Like, let's stop setting people up, you know, let's equip people with the skills they need so they don't end up underwater. They don't end up downstream. So, you know, that's really sort of fueled my passion, right, to get out front of these things, right, and to be proactive and forward thinking and help anybody that wants to learn skills, help people to develop skills, because that's going to keep them healthy, that's going to keep them well, and that's going to have a ripple effect, right? Just, you know, you think of being ripped physically, right? I mean, there's a ripple effect, right, when people get stronger, I think it's just so Yeah. I think it's just a great paradigm and it's so hopeful. And I'm a very positive person and I love people. And I think the thing that makes me the most angry is unnecessary suffering. I can't stand it. Right. I don't like to see people suffer. I understand there's necessary suffering. We all have losses. That's all part of life. And I get that. And right. We can help each other bear suffering. Unnecessary suffering, I don't have a lot of time for it. It's very, very difficult to watch.
Right. It probably grows in its size and impact in the wrong way that it's intended.
Yeah. You know, can I answer that question there, that comment somebody put up, Nagy Hanna? I think this is a really important question. I think people became more aggressive after COVID. I want to speak to that because I do think there is truth in what we're seeing, right? But I really want to encourage you to, because we have to try to stay away from judging, right? To understanding, we want to shift. And I think what's happening with COVID, and this speaks to people's capacity to tolerate emotions, is that people are being stretched farther than they've ever been stretched, and it leads to strain and all kinds of stuff. And I think people are very strained. And so, you know, when you're grieving, COVID has caused a lot of loss. And when you're grieving, it's natural to move through emotion. And you start with that denial and fear, and then the anger, right? And then the bargaining and the sadness. And then if you can tolerate those emotions, you work through them and you come to resolution and acceptance, and then there's a new day. And so it's so important is that if you can't tolerate anger, if people get stuck in anger, they don't know how to work through it, or if they get stuck in sadness, that's what you're seeing. This is a failure to grieve. People don't have the emotional capacity or support to be able to work through these emotions. And you're absolutely right. The training of socialization is that we need people. We need people, right? People help us. People can hurt us, but we help each other. You know, grieving, you don't want to bear suffering alone, right? And that's why being together, staying connected is so important. But we have a lot of angry people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she says, that's such a great comment, Nagy. I mean, you see it in stores and dental offices and
Yeah. People are stretched beyond their capacity. Right. And that's where, and that's when illness happens, right? That's when anger turns to suspiciousness and projection and, you know, paranoia and all those things, right? And violence and bad behavior, right? But it's not that these are bad people at the core. These are people that don't have the resources. And I say, these are people, like they're different from you and me. People, you and I, everybody, if we don't have the resources or the capacity to deal with these things, that's what I said, you know, when I was saying, Kirk, you have to be ready, willing, and able. It's like running a marathon. You have to be able. There has to be a course. And, you know, there is a course. You know, we can learn these skills. We know that there's programs. We know that we can do it. You have to want to do it. Nobody's going to force you to run a marathon, but you have to be ready. So you have to help people build capacity. This is what I'm saying is psychological strength. We have to build it. And some people just have never exercised these muscles. They've never had to, they've never learned how, and we have to, right? We have to, right? Because we're going to be under stress. We're going to be under strain. It's not going to go away in the short term. Things are changing and we have to learn how to deal with it. Right.
And I, you know, the it's anyone's guess, but whenever I have an expert on, I always want to say, hey, what do you think the future might look like? Or what can we anticipate in the future? I mean, what do you see 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now in this very important subject that you're so committed to? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think I'm, as I said, I'm an optimist, and I think shows like this are great. I think getting the word out that people are not broken, people are not bad at the core, you know, people need to develop skills and competencies to deal with stress. Stresses are changing, right? We have a lot of stress right now. We not only have, you know, health stressors, we have physical, financial stressors, relationship stressors, social stressors. We have so many stressors. And so I think if we can get the word out, if we can get people thinking differently, if we can move away from an illness paradigm, right? If we can move away from that and stop, you know, blaming and stigmatizing people and labeling people and start helping people identify their growth opportunities and help them learn the skills that they need, we can have a huge shift. We can create a tipping point, but it starts with consciousness. It starts with awareness. So if we can get the awareness out, if people can learn that, that this is different, this is a new paradigm, it's hopeful, it's positive, I think then we can learn and we can build and we can grow and we can be healthy. And yeah. I think we have the capacity to solve all of the problems that face us, but we have to start with ourselves. We have to start with, that's the inside out, Kirk, that you said, you have to start inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just going to encourage you guys, if you haven't seen or read any of Jackie's stuff, you know, Jackie, I want you to talk about your book, and then you also do courses. You've got courses, you've got your institute. I want people to check it out. Number one, I want them to get the book, and I'm going to put it up on the screen. Tell us about what's in the book. And then you did some sample courses for us, but you also have other things, great resources, and tell them what they are and how they can get them.
Yeah, well, I guess, first of all, you know, the book introduces this whole paradigm shift. You know, the whole purpose of the book is because people would ask, well, what is it? What is it? And so I finally just had to try to write it somewhere so people could read it at their own time. But it talks about mental fitness and what resilience is and where these habits of mind come from and how we build them. And it doesn't go into detail about building them. It's not a pathway to, oh, I'm going to read the book and I'm going to build all these things. It's an awareness tool. It will help you to learn about what the skills are. And then, you know, we have developed a whole framework and a whole series of programs. And so we use kind of this sort of awareness is first and then education. And that can come in talks or workshops and webinars. We have live ones. And then, you know, building skills. We have actually programs where you can, you know, log in, you can join. We actually have a new program coming, I think, in the next month. So if you go to airinstitutes.com, I think it's Discover Resilience. And it's a 4-part introduction to those big mental muscle groups, right? And it introduces you to some of those skills. And then we have build programs, right, that prescribe exercises and coaching. And so a lot of it is interactive and sort of live through the through that webinar sort of, you know, way, was a sort of a course library. But also one of the things that we're trying to do to make it more accessible is put it on a platform so you'd be able to log in and do your own tracking. So we're actively trying to build this out because there's so much demand. But right now, if you're interested, you can always go to www.air-institutes.com. Yeah. And you can, you know, there's a, I think there's an upcoming course the end of the month. And they're brief and they're fun. And, you know, you get to connect with other people in a much more real and meaningful way, right?
Yeah, Jackie, this is so awesome. I'm going to have you back again and again. Just to, I mean, you are a wealth of information. Every time you come, you bring something valuable that we can use. And I think this is a topic that is open for discussion, and it always will be. And it, we're always going to need new tools in our journey to be human and connecting with others. And I'm just so grateful to have you on here and just give us some great perspective. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And remember, you know, we often focus on differences. We're more similar than we think. We all bleed red, right? We're all, you know, we're driven to attach. We're social creatures, right? And relationships can be difficult, and we have to learn how to tolerate and deal with them, right?
Amen to that. Yeah. So, all right. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. Jackie, I'm just so grateful. Thank you guys for watching or listening to the Best Practice Show, wherever you're listening to it. So if you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share it with your friends, and keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see on the show, whether it be with Jackie or other great influencers in dentistry. And you're going to see, we're going to start lining them up even more. We've got some great ones in the weeks ahead. So make sure you subscribe. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.